News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5 at 7 minutes after 8 o'clock on this election day, voting day, and folks are at the polls.
Yeah, lots of election talk upcoming. I want to get to the text, and then we'll talk with Quinn Hillier, as we do every Tuesday. And quickly, just to wrap the story from last hour about that rancher in Nevada whose home was destroyed apparently by a meteorite.
Yeah.
And he was fine. One of his dogs, unfortunately, didn't make it out. But I learn so much more every time I tell a story on air because you, the texter or caller, gives us more information. Couple texts here. Only person ever hit by a meteor was in Sylacauga. And Drewski texted in the 50s. And in Enterprise, a woman was struck by a meteor.
Her name's Hodges.
Yeah, so I looked this up. The Sylacauga meteorite fell in 1954 in Oak Grove, Alabama, near Sylacauga. It's commonly called the Hodges meteorite because a fragment of it struck Anne Elizabeth Fowler Hodges. Now, she lived. They said it was a grapefruit-sized fragment that crashed through the roof of a farmhouse, bounced off a large wooden console radio. You can picture that.
Mm-hmm.
And hit Hodges while she napped on a couch. The 34-year-old woman was badly bruised on one side of her body, but was able to walk. She actually lived another 20 years. The earliest claim of a person being hit by a meteorite comes from 1677 in Italy, and they're not sure about the reality of that one.
He was a friar or some sort of a...
That's right. A Milanese friar who was killed by a meteorite in 1677. But other than that, the only on-record meteorite striking a person was in Sylacauga, Alabama, of all places.
That's amazing.
Some of the
incredible
turnout texts this morning. Monty says J.E. Turner Voting Center has a steady flow coming and going. Art said voted in Barnwell, and it was busy. Brian says Baker High, in and out, 15 minutes to vote. Big Enos says just voted at the Civic Center in Gulf Shores, in and out in 10 minutes, no issues. Steve says Tanner Williams had a good crowd this morning. Suzanne says Stapleton Fire Department location full and moving smoothly. G-Man, the New Life Assembly of God polling place in Spanish Fort is completely packed. We also heard this morning that Bon Secure, they're pretty packed out. Also, Bio La Battery. Let's see. Greg said about 30 people were voting at the time that he got there. So, at least through word of mouth, it sounds like a pretty high turnout this morning in our area.
It does. A lot better than the primaries and the runoffs.
Yes,
sure.
Certainly.
Quinn Hillier, QuinnHillier.com, joins us now. Quinn, happy voting day and election day.
Happy voting day indeed.
So we've got enough. Go ahead, Dalton.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, I think the big story tonight will be apparently the non-stories, because yesterday, Quinn, the White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre preparing folks to wait possibly days for winners to be revealed as they count these mail-in and absentee ballots late. We saw this in 2020. What are your thoughts on this kind of, if it happens tonight, we can call it the new normal, taking a long time to figure out who's won these races.
There's no reason for it. There shouldn't be such easy, widespread early voting. There should be, absentee voting for cause, which I have used. But that's, again, for cause if you're going to be out of town or something. And they should be able to start counting mail-in votes as soon as the polls open. They should have poll commissioners starting to count those absentee votes so that it doesn't take days and days and days for votes to be counted. Mm-hmm. People need to know the result. It when they don't know the result soon enough, it causes all sorts of conspiracy theories to erupt, and it's just not good for democracy.
No. Not good.
Now, I've been thinking about it this morning with the other news that apparently the Powerball was delayed last night because they didn't get
one state's
numbers in. But to me, I'm thinking of how they do this Powerball and the Mega Millions drawing every few days, right? And they're able to get all of this done. And I guess the point is it's taking so long for them to count votes in such important elections. But with something like the lottery, it's so streamlined that this is the first time I've ever heard that they haven't gotten their lottery numbers in. I don't know, just kind of comparing the two this morning. At this point, I mean, we've seen Brazil, France, some of these other countries, they're able to do it in one day and night, Quinn, and it's just a bad look, and you're right, it opens fraud to a lot of people to claim that there's fraud.
It's a terrible look, and it's absolutely unnecessary. There is an election day for a reason. Here's one thing. Having all this early voting is an incumbent protection act, because so many campaigns, if you have a target date, you build your campaign around the election day itself, which is also when voters tend to be paying the most attention. Well, if you're an unknown candidate challenging an incumbent, it takes a lot longer to get known, and especially when people aren't paying attention as much until election day. And so a lot of the early votes come in and they favor the well-known name, the incumbent, in most cases. And then, you know, suddenly the challenger catches fire when people start paying attention, or there's a big national wave and people start paying attention and say, you know, I really like the challenger. Well, all the votes of all these early voters have already been cast before the challenger really got to make his or her mark. That's not a good system. There's an election day for a reason, and that is because it focuses the attention and gives everybody the exact same target date, and therefore the exact same playing field.
Yeah, even playing field, exactly. Quinn, I'm looking over some of your columns this past week and last week. The Eagle Forum of Alabama and the Southeast Law Institute filed a motion. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Okay, well, we've talked about this case before. This is where the Eagle Forum and Southeast Law Institute helped drum up support for a law that the Alabama legislature passed to, in most cases, outlaw sex changes for children. The Justice Department under Joe Biden thinks that law is unconstitutional, and they are helping challenge the law in court. The weird thing is the Southeast Law Institute and Eagle Forum are not parties to the suit. All they were is just, you know, citizens or citizen groups making their views known, and that has nothing to do with whether the law is constitutional or not. But the Justice Department issued a subpoena for 5 years of records, every communication they had, every email they had, every single time that they did anything to discuss this pending legislation, which is a huge burden for no reason, because it doesn't have anything to do with whether the law is constitutional. So that's the background, and the groups moved to quash the subpoena, meaning the subpoena is not going to be carried out because it's not necessary, it's burdensome, et cetera, et cetera. The judge granted the motion to quash the subpoena. So now the groups, thank goodness, don't have to answer this abusive subpoena. And then just late last week, the groups have now filed a motion for penalties against the Justice Department. They had to hire lawyers and pay lawyers, or the lawyers had to give away their time to defend the groups to the tune of tens of thousands of dollars, not to mention the fact that all the workers at the group, each group has only one worker, they had to spend hours and hours and hours away from what they're usually supposed to be doing in order to try to fight this subpoena, and all the volunteers had to. So they're asking for damages to be paid by the government, and the judge ought to grant that request for damages. They shouldn't have to pay their own legal fees for a subpoena that was abusive and invalid.
Yeah, and squashed, right.
And you know, a lot of politicians from Alabama and even outside the state called this a political hit job. I mean, basically, at the time, the press secretary previous to Jean-Pierre. She said she's now on CNN, and I can't remember. No, MSNBC. She basically said, hey, we're coming for you, Alabama.
Yeah,
once
she
that
said
happened.
It, she, right. She said it well in advance. Yeah. Like, I see what you're doing down right. there, and we're not happy.
And
exactly.
Then
this is political harassment of mm-hmm. a group that's just exercising its First Amendment rights to participate in the political process.
Kind of scary.
So, Quinn, a lot of Republicans have said once we win the House and possibly the Senate, then that will be one of our main focuses. Is this the political persecutions coming through the DOJ or through the FBI? And how do you think they'll go about that? I know one of your columns this week, break up the FBI. Will they start on this immediately, depending on what happens tonight, or what are you seeing?
Well, I'm seeing two possibilities. One is a lot smarter than the other. They could either turn around and say tournament's fair play and start investigating every Democrat and try to, you know, basically turn the tables and political tit for tat. That's not a good idea. The public doesn't want that. But what the public does want is for the government itself to operate in a fair and neutral manner. So if they want to investigate the abuses of the FBI and the Justice Department and the IRS, the public would cheer, because that's saying the government cannot get so big that it can start abusing citizens, and we're going to exercise our congressional oversight to make sure that the government doesn't do that again. That sort of investigation is a very wise thing. It's a very necessary thing. And I'm hearing Republicans on Capitol Hill saying they're going all after
it. It's interesting because it's everyday citizens all the way up to a former president. And there just seems to be, like, anybody can be targeted.
Mm-hmm.
You and I can be targeted as easily as a guy who lives in Mar-a-Lago.
Look, there is, you know, there might be reason for investigations. I mean,
sure.
The fact of the matter is Trump had a lot of documents that literally belonged to the government. Whether they were classified or not, they belonged to the government by law. And so, you know, whether they needed to do that raid like they did, I don't know. But they did need to do something to get those documents back. So not every investigation of a political figure is just a political hack job, but there certainly do seem to be a lot of them. And and the raid of Mar-a-Lago, the way that they did it, you know, raised a lot of questions, in large part because they have done so many other political raids, like
exactly.
when they sent a 25-person SWAT team to the house of a pro-life protester who had already said he was going to cooperate about, you know, a little altercation that he had. They show up in tactical gear when he's trying to get his seven young children off to school.
Mm-hmm.
That's absurd. That's the kind of thing that's abusive, and that's why people are saying enough is enough.
Yeah, and, you know, all of the discussions as far as what will drive people to the polls today, I haven't heard that at all. No one's talking about the overreach of powers from the DOJ and the FBI that we're seeing, but I imagine that's part of the reason some folks will go out and vote red today.
Oh, yeah, that is a very serious undercurrent. Just like in 2010, the story of the new Black Panthers that had intimidated voters and then the Obama Justice Department let them off, that was a big issue when you talk to people leaving the exit polls. I said, yeah, well, I'm sort of mad about that, too. Well, all of this adds in to the disgust. And as long as Republicans, when they get the House back, as long as they focus on actual government activity and reining in the IRS and FBI abuses rather than making it some sort of personal tit-for-tat, I think the public will applaud.
I do, too. All right, a blast from the past. Patty Murray. I know you wanted to talk about her, and we'll do that after the break. Okay, Quinn?
Sounds good.
Yeah, that's one of those now tight Senate races, and that'll be what everyone's paying attention to tonight. Mm-hmm. It looks like the Republicans almost guaranteed to win back the House, but the Senate, that one's a lot more interesting.
821, Dan and Dalton. Again, we're here tonight with Sean Sullivan and Jeff Poehler with election coverage beginning at 8 o'clock. So on Washington State, Liberal Democrat Patty Murray's been in office, you were pointing out, Dalton, doing the math about as long as you've been around.
Yeah, 92 she was elected.
Wow. And she is going to be challenged this year.
Tiffany Smiley candidate opposing Patty Murray.
What's your opinion on all this, Quinn?
Well, the first time I really paid attention to Tiffany Smiley was when Katie Britt was in Mobile about 6 weeks ago. And, you know, she's running hard for her own race, but she said she did try to be a team player for other Republicans for one race in particular, and that is she mentioned Tiffany Smiley and told the story. She's a very good businesswoman, but also her husband was a serviceman in Iraq and was blinded by an IED. And anyway, it's a great story, and Katie Britt said Tiffany Smiley is awesome. So anyway, Tiffany Smiley is running. Oh, and I do have to say, Katie Britt, by the way, I think is going to represent us really, really well, assuming she gets up to Washington. But be that as it may, Tiffany Smiley is running against 30-year incumbent Patty Murray. And she's making a late run. The only reason she might not win is all those early ballots I talked about earlier, because Washington is a mail-in state.
Mm-hmm.
But if she wins, we need to fly Patty Murray down here and make her ride a tricycle around the Airbus plant. This comes from our old friend Stephen Nodine, by the way, who reminded me this. When Boeing, which is in Washington State, was fighting Airbus for that tanker contract, Patty Murray, that bad word, said, heck, in Alabama, they can't build anything. They can't even build tricycles.
Remember that.
Which was just as obnoxious as it gets. And, of course, Boeing stole the contract that Mobile won fair and square. But then Mobile got the Airbus contract instead and, of course, has done a great job with that. Well, when Tiffany Smiley, if she goes and kicks Patty Murray out of the Senate, we should grab Patty Murray and give her an all-expense-paid trip down to here and then put her on a tricycle so she can see that we do better than tricycles, but she's the one that's going to have to ride it around and watch the planes going overhead.
And Boeing's been a complete calamity with the contract that they stole.
Yeah, absolutely.
And in terms of the production.
Mobile ended up doing very well with the commercial airliner and proved that Patty Murray was wrong. And now, maybe, if the wave is big enough, and especially since there's a good candidate out there, Tiffany Smiley, maybe the voters of Washington will finally send Patty Murray home where she belongs.
That would be a big upset, and we'll leave it with this. Less than a minute to go. 538 giving Republicans a 59% chance of taking the Senate. The House would be an upset if Democrats were to pull that off. By the time they count up these votes, Quinn, you think Republicans will be in charge of just the House or both the House and Senate? What do you think?
Well, the House is basically a foregone conclusion. The Senate is going to be pretty close. I do think Republicans will probably get to 51. Maybe, though, the 51st is Murkowski in Alaska, and if she does, I could even see her switching parties back to Schumer. So, you know, Republicans need to get 52 to be really sure that they have a majority.
QuinnHillier.com. Also, you can see his work at the Washington Examiner. Quinn, thanks a bunch.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
You got it. 8:30, Dan and Dalton, Mobile Mornings on FM Talk 106.5. Morning from Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig on this election day, voting day in Alabama. And across the country, too. So hopefully we'll have some clarity tonight talking about elections results. And that's our plan anyway. That's going to be beginning at 8 o'clock this evening with Sean Sullivan, Jeff Poore, Dalton Orwig, and me.
Yeah, and special guests to be named later, I'm sure. And some polls will close at 6 o'clock, some of the Eastern time zone polls. But with Georgia and Pennsylvania included, I doubt we'll have any real answers immediately after those polls close. But I guess we'll have to wait and see. We'll get into some of these close elections nationwide and what forecasters are saying may happen tonight here in just a little bit. And taking a look back at the text line and polling places this morning, Tom says good and quick crowd at Via Midtown. Another texter says Silver Hill, in and out, less than 15 minutes. One texter says I was number 50 at Perdido VFD. Very good turnout so far. Everything is smooth, but County Road 47 is shut down at the railroad tracks due to construction. So that's Ronnie letting us know how things are going over in Perdido. Let's see. Ron says, I'm heading to the polls now. I'm tired of being a subject, ready to be a citizen again. Matthew says, steady crowd at Our Savior Catholic Church on Cody Road. Smooth in and out, only took 10 minutes. And Fire Dog says Bell Forest in and out in 5 minutes. So keep those coming in, 251-343-0106. That also works for our phone line. And on the line right now, we have David in Mobile. Hey, David.
If your textures are correct and that the voting districts and our precincts in Spanish Fort are really busy, that bodes well for FM Talk Zone at Pete Ream for tonight.
That would be necessary if Pete were to pull off the upset, right? If Pete Ream were to win, he would need turnout in Spanish Fort, which is new to that district after the redistricting. That's really, David, the only statewide race in our area that seems to be close. We do have some localized races that may end up being close, but the Pete Ream Vivian Figures one being looked at statewide.
Yeah, and I know everybody's been waiting for my predictions, so here they are. I think the Republicans take the House with a net gain of 41 seats, and I think the Republicans take control of the Senate with a net gain of one. Mm. And here's why I think that's only they're only going to pick up one seat and how they're going to do it. I think they pick up Nevada, and I think they retain Pennsylvania. The only reason I'm not calling the Georgia for the Republicans is because of the early voting situation there, and I don't trust late surges in the polls like Herschel Walker's had. So therefore I'm not comfortable calling Georgia for the Republicans, and I think Mark Kelly is in a good position to retain his seat in Arizona. Now, if Patty Murray does end up losing in Washington State, that prediction is going to be completely wrong, because it's going to be a red tsunami that's going to wipe out several candidates, and it could be as high as a net gain of 6 or 7 seats for the Republicans if a senator from the state of Boeing loses in Washington State.
Well, and your House prediction, 41 seats, I mean, that is on the high end of projections for the Republicans. So you see a big win in the House, but not nearly the same in the Senate with just a gain of one seat. So that would mean a lot of split ticket voting in your predictions, David.
Well, that is true, but I also believe that the reason why it'll be a bigger gain in the House than in the Senate is because it's easier to flip smaller districts than it is statewide districts, especially when so many people are going to be voting against these communist socialist cultural warfare that the Democrats have been perpetrating on America for the last couple of years, and really for the last 6 years. And because there's a lot of Latinos, a lot of black voters, and a lot of other minority voters that are that would vote Democrat but are not going to vote Democrat because they are not socially far out there culturally as the Democratic Party is right now.
The Democratic Party is not doing a good job of aligning with the general population. Quick question: Why do you not trust the polls in Georgia that have got Walker surging?
Mainly because of the early voting situation. I know if you talk to our friend Brendan Kirby, he'll tell you that the people that really only early vote is the people that have made up their mind that they're going to vote and they wouldn't change their vote. And that is true to a certain extent. But when you have an early voting situation like Georgia has, where you're having record turnout in early vote, that it's just hard to say that the late surge in the polls for Herschel Walker is going to bear fruit in the election result.
And one last question, where you been? We've missed you, David.
I work late at night, so I usually am sleeping while you guys are pontificating.
Okay. Right.
Thank you, David.
We'll pontificate without you, but thank you, buddy.
Yeah, you spoke for both of us there. I don't miss David.
Yeah, I'm just trying to be cordial. I'm the cordial one here.
So he mentioned that
you try it out sometime.
I'll try it one of these days. Mentioned the Georgia race there. That, of course, is one of the most closely watched races. Looking at real clear politics, and not that they are, you know, the Bible of election results. Actually, they are one of many who have been way off recently over the last decade or two. But since they average all of the polls together, I find their take more interesting than the like the 538s or the Politicos.
Yeah.
And what they have right now for the Senate. Now, the House, it's a pretty sure thing, kind of like Quinn and David said there. It's very likely that the House swings towards the Republicans. Now, whether they gain 20 seats or 45 seats, that's left to be determined. But it would be a major upset if the Democrats retain the House. For the Senate, right now, Real Clear Politics has... so you have obviously the 100 seats. It's split 50-50 right now. They say that for the Republicans, 42 Senate seats are either completely safe or aren't up for election. So without a doubt, you'll have 42 Republicans in Senate.
Okay.
41 Democrats will be in Senate come the next term. That's the ones they've deemed safe or not up for election on the Democrat side. So that leaves you with right around, let's see, 17 seats that are up for grabs. And they have two of those leaning likely Democrat. That would be in Illinois and New York, where Schumer is up. They have one that leans Democrat. That's Blumenthal over in Connecticut. They have three that are likely GOP. So that's Chuck Grassley in Iowa. In Missouri, you have a race there. And then in Utah, Mike Lee, that's likely GOP. And they also have three that lean GOP. North Carolina, where Bud is running for the Republicans, Rubio in Florida, and in Ohio, where J.D. Vance is the Republican candidate. So they leave eight that are toss-up elections here. And so if you take their leans and likely GOP, they have, before you take into account the toss-ups, Politico says the Republicans will already be working with about 48 seats and the Democrats with 45, leaving eight more to grab. Arizona, they say, is a toss-up. That's between Mark Kelly and Blake Masters. In Colorado, they have that as a toss-up with Bennett, the incumbent Democrat. In Georgia, Warnock, the incumbent, against Herschel Walker. And New Hampshire, they have that rated as a toss-up, which is kind of hard to believe. Nevada, toss-up. Washington with Patty Murray, they have rated as a toss-up. In Pennsylvania, the Fetterman-Oz race, they have as a toss-up. And then in Wisconsin, where Ron Johnson is the Republican incumbent, they still have that as a toss-up. But if you look at their polling averages for those toss-up races, they have basically every one of them, the Republicans are polling ahead. In Pennsylvania, and it's very close in some of these, they have Oz ahead by a half a point in the polling averages.
Yeah, keep an eye on that thing.
In New Hampshire, where I think Bolduc is the Republican they think might be able to swing the upset, they have the incumbent Hassan leading by a point and a half. In Nevada, they have Adam Laxalt, the Republican, up by 3.5 points. In Arizona, Masters up by a third of a point, the Republican. In Georgia, they have Herschel Walker. Again, these are all averages. Herschel Walker up by a point and a half in Georgia. In Washington, they still have Patty Murray, the Democrat, up by 3 points. In Wisconsin, they have Johnson up, the Republican, by 3.6 points. In North Carolina, they have Bud all the way up by 6 points. And then Ohio, Vance up by 8 points. In Florida, Rubio up by 8.8 points. So if these polling averages actually did shake out, they have potentially Republicans holding a good 54 or maybe even 55 seats in the Senate heading into this next term. And while it's not the 60 they would need to break the filibuster, that would be a pretty large number in the Senate.
Well, it also would be a pretty large statement, right?
Oh, yeah.
About where this country is and what this country is feeling. And they're feeling, a lot of people are feeling, again, that the Democrats are just simply way out of alignment with their core values.
Mm.
And so you've got, and again, we can't stress enough what independent voters did in 2020 and what they probably are going to do again this this day. Independent voters, moderate voters, let's say, not independent, but moderate voters are probably going to tell this tale. Female Republicans or female moderates in the suburbs of cities.
The suburban moms, they always
suburban
talk about.
Suburban moms that went maybe drifted a little bit in 2020. They're probably steadfast now with, and I think a lot's got to do with the culture wars. And that's the Democrats' own doing.
Yeah. I have trouble. I just can't put myself in the brain of someone who might vote split ticket, you know, a Republican in the House and then a Democrat in the Senate.
Yeah.
Unless it's a state like Pennsylvania where you maybe you're a Democrat, but you can't find yourself voting for Fetterman after how he's, you know, been able to show off his health or the lack of it.
So you're talking about people who are voting while holding their nose between their index finger and their thumb. Like, I really don't like this guy, but I really despise that guy.
That would be the only situation where you see split ticket voting, but we'll see.
It's going to be an interesting night tonight. We'll be in here with election coverage for you beginning at 8 o'clock. Can't wait. Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. It is Mobile Mornings and 251-343-0106. Call or text.
852 FM Talk 106.5. As we wrap up Mobile Mornings on this election Tuesday. And this segment brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Locally owned by Trey Bennett, and his crew's been doing fantastic work on both sides of the bay for well over a decade now. One customer review I have here from Drew, one of many customer reviews. Drew said, I've used 1-800-GOT-JUNK 3 or 4 times now, and I seriously love these guys. Can't recommend them enough. From the get-go, they're super quick to respond to requests, emails, or phone calls, and prompt to get us on the schedule. I don't think I've ever waited more than one business day between when I called and when they were out at the property. And when they're out there, they are professional, kind, and compassionate regarding the mess they're clearing out. Drew continues, they work quickly and always go the extra steps to make sure the site is as clean as can be when they leave. If you need junk hauled or if you have family that needs help getting rid of hoarded junk, these guys are the way to go. I won't use another hauling service. That all from Drew, one very happy customer.
I should say so.
1-800-GOT-JUNK. You could set that appointment up today by calling them. The name is the number, 1-800-GOT-JUNK, or you can do the same thing online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com.
Got a slam show, Jeff Poor, today on this election day. That makes sense. 9:35, Media Research Center's Joseph Vasquez. 10:05, Katie Britt, of course, U.S. Senate candidate today. 10:35, he's already in. U.S. Senator Tommy Tuberville is Jeff's guest. And at 11:30, fellow from Right Side Radio, Phil Williams, will be the guest on the Jeff Poor Show today. Always provocative and always a lot of information, a lot of opinion, a lot of it with statewide politics.
Yeah, looking at some of the polling places, we'll hopefully get into the amendments here in a second. Charlie, our own Charlie, says as of 8:30 this morning, 202 people had voted at the precinct on Carroll Plantation Road in Tillman's Corner at the community center. He said no line but a full house and brisk movement of people in and out. Ron says good crowd in Sims, in and out in 15 minutes. Buford with the hot take of the morning, and I'll just leave this here for you and let you guys comment. He says suburban moms are what put Katie Britt in and Doug Jones. The ones I know vote very moderate Rhino Republican and safe, charismatic Democrats. They easily fall for empty, feel-good type campaigns. They are the reason the founding father initially banned women from voting. That's Buford this morning with a hot take before 9 a.m. So yeah. Check that one out.
I mean, my fingers are stinging.
Fish River Frank, who is leading the FM Talk 106.5 College Pick'em Challenge and still found time to vote this morning. I said Mars Hill, Fairhope, busy, 300 so far in and out in 15 minutes. Another texter says, how closely are the polls being watched by both parties in these battleground states? Very closely, maybe too closely probably if you're an election worker and you have all these people peering over your shoulders. But even the DOJ and this raised some eyebrows yesterday. The Department of Justice said they'll monitor polls in select municipalities across 24 states. You'll have monitors from the DOJ's Civil Rights Division and the U.S. Attorney's offices. Some precincts will have Office of Personnel Management monitors, and it includes battleground states like Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, North Carolina, Nevada, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. So, yeah, a lot of election people out there monitoring the polls to see if anything fishy goes on. We'll have a lot more on that tonight because you know the reports will be pouring in. If there are any more water line breaks in Atlanta, people will be asking a lot of questions.
By the way, Cobb County, Georgia, among the places where the DOJ is situated. Shocker, right? Gwinnett County, also in Georgia. Those are both right around the city of Atlanta. Fulton County is pretty much the city of Atlanta. So I thought that there was maybe going to be an Alabama municipality, and there is none. So that we are not one of the 24. four states?
Right.
Okay.
No, we're not on that list.
No.
Quick breeze through the amendments. I'll try to do this fast. So Amendment 1, again, that's Anaya's law. A yes vote would allow judges to deny bail to a wider class of people charged with crimes. And you've seen many people line up in support of that. Amendment 2, a yes vote will allow counties to use federal funds from the American Rescue Plan Act to recruit broadband companies to build broadband infrastructure in their communities. Amendment 3 is meant to strip the governor of the ability to commute a death penalty sentence without appropriate notice. The amendment will require the governor to notify the state's attorney general and victim's family prior to commuting a death sentence. Amendment 4, if it's passed, would prevent the legislature from changing state election laws in the 6 months before an election. Amendment 5 has to do with outdated language in the Constitution. A yes vote would remove the term orphan's business from the probate judge section of the of the Alabama Constitution. Amendment 6, voting yes will allow cities to use taxes they already collect to fund capital projects and repay bonds. Basically, a yes vote would mean pay-as-you-go for cities across the state. Amendment 7 increase economic development by changing the way municipalities and counties are able to spend money on economic and industrial development projects. Amendment 8 and 9 are local to Shelby, Jefferson, and Tuscaloosa counties, but are on the statewide ballot because there was some discussion in the legislature against this. It would put some privately owned sewer companies under the control of the Public Service Commission statewide. And then Amendment 10 would place any of those previous 9 new amendments in the correct reorganized location. Amendment 10 is basically for the reorganization and striking of some words in the Alabama Constitution. And those are the 10 amendments you'll see on the ballot today.
Okay. That way you can get in and out quicker now. Dolphin just helped you out. It's 8:59 on FM Talk 106.5. Jeff Poole Show is next. Dan and Dalton. Same to see you tomorrow. Actually, we'll talk to you tonight beginning at 8 o'clock with Jeff and Sean Sullivan, of course, and other special guests with our election recap.